Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. If you've applied for a job lately, you probably have been asked to check a small box if you have ever been convicted of a felony. For many of us, that's not a problem, but for thousands of ex-felons in Ohio, it is. More than 850 laws and administrative rules also restrict where former felons may work in Ohio, making it nearly impossible for anyone with a record to land a decent job. Coming up, we're going to hear about a proposed bill that would scrap blanket job barriers for those in Ohio who have done their time. Patrice Palmer is a reentry social support specialist at the Franklin County Office of Justice Policy and Programs. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Jesse Kelly is the manager of government affairs and criminal justice and civil liberties at the R Street Institute. That's a nonprofit, nonpartisan public policy think tank in Washington, D.C. Welcome to the show, Jesse.
Good morning.
Has the life of an ex-convict always been so difficult?
Oh, certainly. And I think that, you know, we saw the trend in the 1990s of really incorporating more harsh sentences on people. And with that idea of being tough on crime came more barriers for people once they were reentering their communities. You know, recently the federal government passed the First Step Act and the Fair Sentencing Act, which is trying to go back and alleviate some of those problems, but definitely people who are returning to our communities are facing a lot of barriers.
What was the philosophy back in the 90s in erecting those barriers after someone's done their time?
Sure. Well, there was a rise in violent crime in the 1990s, and a lot of that was attributed to the increased use of drugs and this war on drugs idea. But we just saw laws that were completely ineffective in deterring crime and providing rehabilitation, and instead they just created barriers not only to employment but to housing and to further equity when people were returning.
They also started to limit things like Pell Grants and stuff like that to people serving time, right?
Absolutely. Before the 1994 crime bill, if you were otherwise eligible to receive Pell Grants, you could, and it didn't matter whether or not you were an incarcerated student or a traditional student, if you might say. Today, there's some conversation on Capitol Hill and in a few states to try to reinstate Pell Grants for incarcerated students, which is certainly hopeful.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We are talking about the life of a person when they reenter society after being incarcerated. Over the years, lawmakers have erected many obstacles. That doesn't even count the stigma associated with being an ex-convict. If you have a question or comment, want to tell your own story about this, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at WOSU.org. My guest, you just heard from Jesse Kelly. She's the manager of government affairs and criminal justice and civil liberties at the R Street Institute. That's a nonprofit, nonpartisan public policy think tank in Washington, D.C. Also with us is Patrice Palmer. She is a reentry social support specialist at the Franklin County Office of Justice Policy and Programs. Patrice Palmer, you are not just an expert because of your education, which is extensive, but you're also a former felon. You've served time in prison.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What did that teach you?
Honestly, the first few times, I've actually been incarcerated four times, none of which I'm proud of. But honestly, I wasn't desperate enough for change. So I didn't learn much of anything the first few times, to be honest. It was in 2003, going back to the Ohio Reformatory for Women, for the fourth time that my thought process changed. And I thought about the choices and decisions that I was making in life and the effects not only on myself, but my children, my family, and the people that love me, and made a conscious decision that I've got to do something different. So my process of thinking was, I've got to change. I had a drug addiction, and I needed to have treatment for that addiction to address those barriers and challenges. And so coming home from prison in 2003, I went to a program in Cincinnati that was an inpatient program, which I had never done before, to address my addiction to drugs. And from there, you know, started my path to recovery and my path to reentry. And doing that, I surrounded myself by strong, positive people that challenged me, that corrected me, that supported me, but most of all, that loved me unconditionally and walked with me through my process of change.
Did you try to get a job?
I did.
What was that like?
Very difficult because my first job, actually, in 2003, I was a janitor. Hated every minute of it, scrubbing walls, cleaning carpets. And then I got a part-time job at a Wendy's in Cincinnati. And I thought, when I got that paycheck, there's no way I'm going to be able to take care of my family with this kind of money. So in my mind, either I was going to go back to selling drugs or hustling and doing criminal activities, or I had to do something different. I chose to do something different, and that was go to school and get an education. So for the next 8 years, I was in school and have a bachelor's or master's and a doctorate. And so that changed my economical standing, and that my education gave me the ability to have experience, but my life experience gave me the expert opinion in this field.
You know, Jesse Kelly, the the people who are incarcerated in our country, certainly in Ohio, are disproportionately African American. They're disproportionately low income. That means, particularly when it comes to the low income part, is what I'm referring to here, is that they also don't have the resources and support systems in place when they leave. So there's a huge snowball effect on all of this, right?
Oh, absolutely. And one of the key pillars that we talk about when we discuss criminal justice reform at the R Street Institute is family connectivity and being able to be plugged in not only to your community, but be inserted right back into your family unit. And to highlight what you guys were saying earlier, you know, a study was published in 2018 that found that almost half of formerly incarcerated people reported no earnings within the first 3 years after release. And that's just a recipe for recidivism and decreased public safety.
And what about the recidivism rates? How did these kinds of the system we've erected over the last 30 years, how did that affect recidivism? Did it go down or did it go up?
So it is most likely that if a person is going to recidivate, they're going to do it within the first 5 years after their release from prison. And that is because we've made it so difficult to come back home and be plugged into a job and to find stable housing and really to be supported by families. Usually people who are low income, when they try to come home, it is one earner in a household that's trying to support a very large family. And that makes it so difficult for everyone. So we think, you know, that private employers and government employers should really embrace hiring formerly incarcerated people. And in fact, there's a piece of federal legislation right now called the Fair Chance Act that was introduced bipartisanly. And its aim is to have federal contractors hire formerly incarcerated people.
Right. There's the Fresh Start Act in the Ohio House right now, House Bill 263. Patrice Palmer, what do you make of that? It would eliminate a lot of these barriers.
I think that it's a great step in the right direction. Most people want to come home and do better. Most people do not want to come home and go right back to prison or jail or caught up in that system. And I think that giving people an opportunity, that second chance, helping them to be able to take care of their families, to be productive citizens in society, is a step in the right direction. From my perspective, if we can support and return the human dignity to how we handle people, not just because they've been incarcerated, but they are a human being. If we can restore the value, the dignity, and the worth of that person, then we return a more productive citizen back into society.
Jesse Kelly, what is your sense about how administrations inside of prisons prepare outgoing inmates for life on the outside, particularly given the fact that while it with all the best intentions, they're reducing sentencing in some cases, but that's also reducing the amount of time that somebody can use prison to do better.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, the first step in the door to prison should be your first step towards recovery and reentry back into society. And it really depends on the wardens and the different prisons and who and what they allow to come in and provide programming. So if there's this private public partnership with employers who can come in and say, I expect XYZ from my employees, and then the training can occur during a period of detention, you're going to have people ready to go to work on day one. And then another thing that is missing a little bit in this conversation, I think, is people who are sentenced to a shorter amount of time in local jails. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we overlook programming for people who are going to be incarcerated for a few months or even a year, but they're still in their communities and usually have a job before that term of detention. So it's maybe more hard for them to take a step away and then be expected to jump right back in where they were.
Right. That's a very big problem, right, Patrice Palmer?
It is. And presently, I do a program in our Franklin County Correctional Center with our females called Pathways. And so we address the opiate epidemic, which we have an issue here in Ohio.
A whole other factor in the equation now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So we look at that and we work with these women and are supportive of these women. And we also have peer supporters on our team that work with them once they are released. So we have a program pre-release while they're incarcerated, which is 8 weeks long, and then a program in the community post-release once they're released, and give them that support to connect them to housing, connect them to treatment, connect them to employment, all of the dynamics that they need that otherwise they didn't have. And to me, if we can wrap our arms around them while they're incarcerated and then when they come home so that they have a better chance to not reoffend and go back.
So often, though, particularly these days, they're dealing with drug addiction. And that how do you deal with anything until you've dealt with that?
Well, I think that's a great question. Addiction
and 8 weeks ain't going to do it.
It's not going to do it. So what we do is work with them while they're incarcerated. Some of them are still in the jail after that 8 week program. And there's other programs that the jail offers that the women are able to utilize. What we do is try to get them connected to supportive services through treatment. Vivitrol is one of the medicated assistant treatments that they can get the day they leave jail, which is an opioid blocker that helps them. And then getting them connected to programs within the community and agencies within the community that is treatment-based, whether that's inpatient or extensive outpatient treatment. And then walking alongside of them and supporting them in their recovery so that they can begin to stand on their own 2 feet.
Jesse Kelly, is there any sense about what this costs society when we erect these obstacles for people after they serve time?
Oh, of course. So 95% of all citizens who are incarcerated in state prisons are going to be released. So it will only benefit our communities and our society to help those people prepare for the time when they are going to be back as part of the general population. You know, I think that highlighting human dignity component that was mentioned earlier is so critically important because people lose their self-value when they don't feel respected. And I think that incorporating that into prison programming is one of the most beneficial things we can do to prepare people to reenter our communities. And then if you want to look at it from an economic or fiscal perspective, having more people employed is going to be better for our economy. So it really benefits not only businesses, but everyone when people have steady jobs.
And during this really relatively full employment period, Patrice Palmer, that's been good news for a lot of people leaving prison.
Absolutely.
There's
Absolutely.
Just more, they're more competitive now.
It is. And there's a lot of employers that are more open to.
They're changing their attitudes.
They are. And I think in Franklin County, Commissioner Brown has a challenge to employers and to landlords to hire one offender, returning citizen, to house one returning citizen. But I also think the second part of that component is that individuals coming home, we have to know that we have a responsibility to do what is right because we're paving the way for somebody else.
Well, Jesse Kelly, I want to say thanks to you. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Jessie Kelly is the manager of government affairs and criminal justice and civil liberties at the R Street Institute. That's a nonprofit, nonpartisan public policy think tank in Washington, D.C. We're going to continue our conversation about the employment prospects for people after they leave prison and jail. They're not good, but they could get better with if legislation is enacted, certainly if attitudes start to change. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. If you've applied for a job lately, you probably have been asked to check a small box if you've ever been convicted of a felony or a crime. For many of us, that's not a problem. But for thousands of ex-felons in Ohio, it is. And their problem becomes everyone else's problem when they can't pay the rent. More than 850 state laws and administrative rules restrict where former felons may work in Ohio, making it nearly impossible for anyone with a record to land a decent job. A proposed state law, the so-called Fresh Start Act, it's House Bill 263, would lift licensing restrictions for Ohioans with a record. Still with us is reentry social support specialist at the Franklin County Office of Justice Policy and Programs, Patrice Palmer. Thanks again, Patrice, for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Michael Shields is a workforce researcher at Policy Matters Ohio. He's written about licensing policies and how they restrict former felons from finding good jobs. Welcome to the show, Michael Shields. Hello, Michael Shields. All right, we will work on getting Michael back on. What do we know about what this bill does, Patrice Palmer?
I think that the bill opens up opportunities for people to have gainful employment that can be sustainable for them to be able to take care of themselves and their households. A lot of times there are employment opportunities at restaurants or warehouses, but the pay is not great and people cannot sustain. So I think this bill opens up the opportunity for people to be able to broaden their search and to be able to become employable.
What about sex offenders? There are restrictions on them about where they can work. They can't work at a daycare center, that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about those restrictions?
I think they're necessary. I think that, you know, people have things that they're challenges that they're dealing with, and that there has to be safeguards in society on certain crimes. And certainly if there's with sex offenders, if there's children involved, you definitely don't want them in that arena or in that area or anywhere working with children. So society is responsible to have those type of safeguards, and I think they're important.
Let's see. Joseph in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Joseph. Hello, Joseph. All right, we're having Robert in Cincinnati. You're on the air. Welcome, Robert. All right, sounds like we have technical difficulties. If you do have a question or comment and you want to join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We are having technical difficulties, though, so you can also email us again at wosu.org/allsides. Why should, Patrice Palmer, this legislation matter to the rest of us?
I think it should matter because, as a society, we should come together in order to grow. And to give people an opportunity that have made poor choices and decisions in life doesn't mean that they're a bad person. People want to take care of their homes, their children, their families, themselves, and allow them the opportunity to do that. When a person goes to prison or sentence and they complete that sentence, they've paid their debt to society, yet they come home with a lot of restrictions, a lot of sanctions, a lot of things that hold them back, and they're still wearing that scarlet letter. Allow them the opportunity to enhance their quality of life and to be a productive citizen in society.
Michael Shields, are you there?
I am.
What is the, in referring to House Bill 263, the Fresh Start Act, what technically would it do?
Sure. So first of all, I would say every Ohioan who wants to work should have the chance to do that. Now, you just said, Ann, we've got about 850 laws and administrative rules that make that more difficult for folks who have a criminal record. Sometimes that's even for less than a conviction. When we do that, when we close off pathways to legitimate work, we make it more likely that people with a conviction will commit a new crime. So most of the job restrictions that we have here in Ohio are concentrated in jobs that are either in the public sector or they're for jobs that have a license that are issued by a state agency. What House Bill 263 would do is to eliminate arbitrary licensing restrictions and keep just the ones that are there to protect public safety.
Like restricting somebody from getting a license working with children when they're a convicted pedophile.
Exactly.
Okay.
So one of the things that the law would do is require that licensing agencies give specific justification for excluding people with certain convictions from a job. So they instead of just anybody who has any conviction being barred from obtaining a license, there would have to be a specific reason that that we could say, you know, this presents a public safety risk or a risk to a vulnerable population that the person would be working with.
What are expectations for passage of this act?
Well, right now the bill has it's in committee in the House of Representatives. I'm not sure, you know, what the schedule is as far as that, but I know that it has heard testimony from the sponsor, Representative Kaler. Advocates have not had an opportunity to testify in favor or against yet, so this is a new bill. It's still in the House.
All right. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We are talking about life after prison and how the prospects are so limited in Ohio, as my guest Michael Shields from Policy Matters Ohio pointed out, because of 850 laws and licensing and rules in the state limiting opportunities for licenses for many, many jobs. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Joseph in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, Joseph.
Hello, Ann. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Oh, okay. So for me, I was incarcerated for 21 years, and I've been released in 2016. And so prior to being released, one of my things was I had created a release plan for my first day out, 30 days, 6 months, 1 year to 5 years. So I haven't reached my 5 years yet, but my third year, I've completed a CDL Class A license. I drive for Columbus Dispatch. I started my own company, Future Mobile Detailing, so you guys could Google me.
Okay.
And we got a Groupon offer right now. I have two employees, 29 and under, young men working with me. We're out here. I think we're out in the Groveport area somewhere.
So, well, listen, Joseph, I would like to hear about your business, but I'm interested in this plan. You know, so having that plan, having a 30-day, that kind of a thing really helped you.
Yes, it did, because what it did, it told me before I was released where I was going to stay, why I was going to stay there, who was going to help me besides my family, for instance, the Goodwill. The Alvis House 360 program, Doug, the Ohio Means Job helped me secure the funding to get a CDL license by going to the program, by committing, you know, going to the Ohio Means Job, doing the things that it need to be done once I got out. Because I'm an ex-felon, there was a lot of restrictions.
Okay.
However, but before I was released, I took a food service class that helped me get a job at Hot Chicken Takeover.
Okay.
Because they are second chance employers. So they were able to help me transition back into the workforce. They helped me start my own business. They helped me get a housing. They helped me do so many other things because they understand the challenges that we do have.
I'm glad that you brought up Hot Chicken Takeover, because Patrice Palmer, those kinds of social enterprise businesses are a really big deal. They're important.
They are.
What, tell people what they do.
Absolutely.
And Joseph, thanks.
Joe DeMoss is just a phenomenal employer. He looks beyond the employee just being there to work, but looks at their personal needs, looks at their shortcomings or challenges and barriers. And then he figures out ways to help them navigate and maneuver systems to be able to get them to a better place. And to me, that's amazing, that he gives people a second chance. But not only that, they can grow in his business. They can, you know, maybe start as a dishwasher, but work themselves up to assistant managers. Mm-hmm. They can do different things. They can come to them and say, hey, I'm having struggles with my rent or transportation. And he has a person on his staff that meets those needs. And to me, that's amazing. Donato's is another company that gives people a second chance and that will allow them to grow with that company and move from starting out maybe just making pizzas or washing dishes to becoming a manager, assistant managers, and move up in those companies. And I think that gives them an economical standing, and it helps them change economical tracks to be able to provide better for themselves and family.
You know, Michael Shields, you can see from examples that Patrice Palmer just used, Donato's, Hot Chicken Takeover, that kind of a thing. Attitudes seem to be changing on the outside. Is there a sense that it's changing on the inside at the General Assembly?
Well, you know, I wouldn't speak to the opinions on the assembly. I'm not a member of the legislature, but I would like to just mention something kind of connected to what the caller was saying about having the CDL and being able to obtain that after having a conviction. This is a case where we've got some restrictions for folks having CDL that are connected to their driving record. So if you have a lot of traffic violations, you can lose your commercial driving license. Now, that makes sense. But we also, it happens that CDLs are one of licenses across Ohio that are at risk for folks who fall behind on child support,
right?
So if somebody, even without having a conviction, falls behind on their child support, when the enforcement agency sends notice of that, an Ohio licensing entity is required to pull their license or to deny an application. So I think this is one of the cases where, you know, we've got a caller who's been able to navigate the system and do well. Thinking about how we can open up those pathways for other folks, I think, is really important. And that's one of the things that House Bill 263 would do.
Robert in Cincinnati, you're on the air. Hi, Robert.
Hello, Ann. How are you doing today?
Good, thank you.
I'm calling because I'm an ex-offender and would like to give my perspective on this whole on the whole thing. I was released in 2011. Shortly thereafter, enrolled in the University of Cincinnati. I have received my bachelor's degree in 2015 in information technology. I have still yet to secure a job in that field. I go from employment to unemployment, getting laid off, taking small jobs here and there. The thing that employers always say when I try to go for interview for like IT and stuff like that is, can you get it expunged? My conviction happened in a state where they can't do expungement. There are some crimes in Ohio that can't be expunged, and I feel that that is a barrier. It's a really big barrier. Just because somebody did a crime, they can move past it, and okay, you may have done a violent crime, but yet you can move past it.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds
like these businesses are saying they have a policy against hiring. And is that Patrice Palmer, what you're hearing too?
Yes,
is that, and they're saying, well, but if you can get it expunged, as you had yours expunged, right?
I had employment prior to that.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So I just got a governor's pardon
Governor's pardon. Okay.
But I've had employment.
But he
many
needs
sectors.
This foothold.
Yeah. Yeah.
Michael Shields, how big of a deal is that in private businesses?
Well, we don't have a way of measuring how big a deal it is, but we certainly can deduce that private employers are often taking their cue from what's happening in public sector jobs and what's happening with licensing entities. Mm-hmm. I think that there's a real opportunity here. Now, House Bill 263 that we've been talking about only speaks to licensing. Now, that's a little bit different from Robert's specific issue. But I think one thing to consider is that there may not be a law that prevents employers from hiring Robert with the conviction that he has. You know, one of the things that we could and should do, and I think would fit very well into the scope of House Bill 263, is for licensing agencies to give guidance to employers about what kinds of things to consider when somebody does have a conviction. So for issuing the license, House Bill 263 would require criminal convictions to not be considered after 5 years unless they were a sexual or violent crime. But also, licensing agencies should give guidance to employers for what kinds of factors to consider. One, how long has it been since the person was convicted or released? What kinds of things has the person done to rehabilitate or to make restitution for a crime that they've committed in the past? So I think that there's a real opportunity there, to be considerate of all of the factors that an applicant brings to a potential job within the scope of licensing, but then also to use that to set a new tone that private employers can also follow.
Melissa in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Melissa.
Hi. I'm a social worker, and I often work with folks who have these kind of barriers. And mm-hmm. I appreciate your comments that you just made about the private employer policies versus Ohio law. That's an important distinction. My question was that I have worked with folks who may not have had a conviction, but have been charged and therefore have been in the court system. And those charges sometimes have been a barrier to them getting employment. And I wonder if you could speak to that.
What about that issue, Michael Childs?
Yes, we know that happens. As far as restricting someone from getting a license, that could potentially be an issue only because we have some guidance in Ohio law having to do with what really ambiguous legal terms, moral turpitude, for instance. We should get rid of that legal ambiguity. But I think much more so than a legal restriction, what we have is private employers who can run a criminal background check and see simply that an arrest was made. Maybe there never was a conviction. So I think that's definitely an issue as well. I think that the way to address that is, to recognize that people bring a whole background and a whole skill set to jobs that when they apply for them, and we should be considering the whole person. You know, we should be considering people's skills. We should be considering if someone does have a conviction, you know, what have they done to move past that? You know, folks who have never had a criminal conviction should not be barred from jobs. From having simply been arrested or charged with a crime.
Is it a civil rights issue?
Absolutely.
Yeah, Patrice Palmer?
I agree with that. That, you know, again, I'll say that good people make poor choices and decisions, and it should not be something that constantly removes them from enhancing their quality of life. And I think looking at it from that perspective, that's what it's doing. Hmm.
Michael Childs, thanks so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
Michael Childs is a workforce researcher at Policy Matters Ohio. Coming up, we're going to hear from Alvis, formerly known as Alvis House, an associate managing director of workforce development from Alvis. It's a nonprofit human service agency that provides reentry services. If you have a question or comment, want to join the conversation, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We'll be right back. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about policies and programs to help people who are leaving jail or prison get back on their feet. Still with us is reentry social support specialist at Franklin County Office of Justice Policy and Programs, Patrice Palmer. Doug Patrick is the Associate Managing Director of Workforce Development at ALVIS. It's formerly known as ALVIS House. It's a nonprofit human service agency that provides reentry services. Doug oversees the Community Reentry Center in Columbus and is responsible for ALVIS's workforce development programs in Columbus, Chillicothe, Lima, and Toledo. Welcome to the show.
All right. Thanks for having me, Ann.
How is the universe of reentry changing? Is it fast or is what's happening?
Oh, it's constantly changing. So we're focusing a lot. I mean, in Central Ohio alone, the unemployment rates have been very low, looking at 2.9% of unemployment rates. And with that dynamic, now employers are finally starting to come to us, and they're starting to recognize restored citizens as a human resource for their company. So it's very exciting, and it helps our team navigate that landscape in a different way.
I think it was a fellow named Joseph called in earlier, and he has worked at Hot Chicken Takeover. I think he went through Elvis House as well. You might have recognized his voice. I don't know. And he's very enthusiastic. He feels a lot of hope, it sounds like, for his future now. And he is also self-employed. He has his own business. Yeah. And I'm wondering where the entrepreneurial piece of this fits in.
Okay. So, I had the opportunity of personally working with Joe. So it was awesome to hear him. Yeah. And just like he said, it really was focusing on that plan. And he was a man with a plan years before he was ever released. And I remember the first day he came to me and he laid that plan out. And we did the best we could to enroll him in different programs and just help facilitate those stepping stones. He mentioned Hot Chicken Takeover, a great second chance employer who truly embraces the community. And now he's an entrepreneur. So he's one of those guys that is constantly looking for different funding streams. And he got very creative for his certain situation, which is very important. It's never a one size fits all.
The entrepreneurial spirit helps. A lot of people do start just working for themselves, do they not? Patrice Palmer,
absolutely.
When they can't get a job from someone else.
Absolutely. And I think that it gives them an opportunity to give back to society. It gives them an opportunity to grow individually. And as Joe said, he has a few employees on his team. There's several people in our community. Joey Green has a landscape business where he hires formerly justice involved or formerly incarcerated people. So a lot of people realize that if somebody won't employ me, let me see what skills and transferable skills and qualities that I have and start my own business. So that is always an opportunity.
You know, you just brought up something in an ancillary way, and that's how we refer to people and what we call them. And names matter, labels matter, it all matters. And tell me, Patrice Palmer, why that's important.
It's important. I always say ex-offender is offensive. Anything with ex in front of it is usually not good. Your ex-husband, ex-partner,
it's
whatever.
It's a pejorative, right? Yeah.
So when you say formerly justice involved, it's more softer. It doesn't have this negative, you know, approach to it.
When have you
say
found it makes a difference?
Ex-con.
Yeah.
I absolutely do. And I think that, you know, formerly justice involved, formerly incarcerated is a better way to approach it. Restored citizen, you know, what do we say is restored? What makes a person restored? Just because they are returning home, they may not be restored. Mm-hmm. So what's the process for them to become a restored citizen? But what they are is formerly justice involved.
Yeah. And Doug Patrick, what has your experience been with the lexicon?
Yeah. So very much to Patrice's point is that I focus on the justice involved. I don't like throwing labels. Ex-felon, ex-offender. Restored citizen. I've had a lot of individuals come to me saying that, how dare you say that I'm restored whenever I've been exposed to years of trauma. And I don't want to go down that path. I don't have the right to. They're people. Mm-hmm. And we just need to refer to them as people.
Hmm. Yeah. Alan in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Alan.
Yeah, I own a lot of rental properties, and I network with a lot of other investors, and we're constantly looking for basic maintenance people that will show up. Is Alvis House a source for that?
Doug Patrick?
Yes, we have many hard skill certification programs. So what's really nice is we served last year over 800 people, and many of which come to us with histories of construction, maintenance, general maintenance, custodial maintenance. So, yes, we have the workforce. We're located on the east side of Columbus at 1991 Bryden Road. And we're open from 9 to 5. So if there's ever a time that you wanted to come in, I have staff there on site that would meet with you. And we just want to gather your expectations of what you're looking for in job applicants, and we'll help you out.
How does that sound, Alan?
That sounds great.
And I want to add to that that the Office of Justice Policy and Program also is a resource for you to reach out to. Commissioner Brown specifically has
Marilyn
a challenge.
Brown, yeah.
To employers to hire people that are returning back to society. And that's our office is at 373 South High Street, the 25th floor, 614-525-4595. That can also be a resource for you as well. And then there's other agencies in the community, Impact, Ohio Means, that has those types of employment opportunities
as well. And Alan, we'll put links on our website at wosu.org/allsides to both Alvis and the Franklin County Office of Justice Policy and Programs, too, to make it a little bit easier for you there.
Yeah.
Alan, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. Bill in Akron, guess we don't have Bill yet. Okay. So that's an interesting thing. Alan wondered if there's people out there that can do the job, and there certainly are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
what about outreach? How is that going for you, Patrice?
Well, our office has the Reentry Coalition that is made up of many partners in the community. Alvis is one of those partners and different agencies within Franklin County. And they come together and strategic planning on how they can, you know, get people to the resources that they need. I think it's important to be able to connect people where they know I can come here and be able to connect to it. One of the things that our office does is we work closely with the court system. We work closely with probation. And so there's a lot of changes going on where people are starting to get the resources and the support that they need and that outreach that they need, whether that's treatment, employment, job training, and those types of things that can help them be a better productive citizen in society.
Yeah. Doug Patrick, as far as finding employers,
yes.
Adam kind of, or Alan brings up an interesting situation. I mean,
well, and here's something that maybe many employers who haven't tried out our facility or all these other social service agencies. We served 800 people last year and 70% secured employment or enrolled in some post-secondary education after completing our programs. And that's within like a 90-day program. So, you know, those stats are very impressive. We're working with hundreds of employers, hundreds.
Okay.
So the outreach is there. It's just all about coming to our center, giving us a call, and just making that connection.
All right. Bill in Akron, you're on the air. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Yes, I was incarcerated. This is back in the 80s.
In the 80s, yeah.
It was my second felony. It was an assault. But because I'd gotten in trouble previously, and I was fortunate enough to be given a break and got put on probation, but I was a hard-headed young kid. I was. I'm 57 now. I was born in 1962. When my parents died, they owned a business that had liquor license. There were 9 employees that worked for it. It did over $1 million a year, and we lost it. We lost everything.
You just made a big, huge leap for me there. Why did you lose everything?
See, anybody who is an ex-felon, there is a list several pages long of everything we're not allowed to ever do again. And it's not just not owning a gun. I cannot have a liquor license.
Okay.
I cannot sell real estate. And, like, there's some really great programs. The Edwin's program up in Cleveland helps train people incarcerated for cooking. But they can never own their own business with a liquor license. They are so limited, and it's so handy. And this has to change. We're handcuffing people for the rest of their life over something. I'm almost 60. This happened 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Am I ever forgiven?
Hmm.
Am I ever made whole? No. No, and that's not fair. There's no. I made those choices, not my mom. I had good parents. I had a good upbringing. I was a dumb, unruly child, but I didn't deserve to have the rest of my life destroyed by the state of Ohio. And that's what's happened to me.
Bill, thanks for your call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks for this show. Bye.
You bet. He makes a really good point. I mean, what does any of that have to do with anything? Is that something, Doug Patrick?
Yeah, so that, you know, it's terrible to hear that. That's a level of frustration that we hear often with everyone. I mean, we see it on a daily basis with people that are recently released, many of which have, you know, committed a crime over 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
Often when they were young.
Yeah, often when they were young. And it's really all about networking and finding the right support system to offer any words of encouragement, build that community, and work with individuals to help work around those barriers. And I'm not here to say that you'll ever feel whole. You know, that's a decision you have to come to yourself. And I feel like there's a lot of resources out there in this community, including Alvis, that really helps build someone's self-esteem, self-worth, and that's a focus that should be a part of that plan.
There was a level of intelligence in his voice. He's listening to public radio, you know, but you just wonder how much has been wasted.
I think he brings up a great point. What comes to my mind is just Leadership USA in New York, which raises the voices of those that are formerly incarcerated. And from my perspective, in order to change laws, legislation, rules, regulation, policy, or whatever, that community of returning citizens, that community of formerly justice involved, have to come together and raise their voices and challenge the status quo. But we also have to realize we carry a responsibility when we do that.
What is that?
That responsibility is to do what is right. That responsibility is to pave the way for others. It is to raise your voice that these types of rules and regulations or sanctions that are in place are creating barriers and challenges for people's life, like he said, for the rest of his life. Why is that? Why is that in place? Why was it created? Why is that foundation laid? And then let's look at why it's there and what safeguards that we can put in place today to be able to move some of those barriers and challenges.
Doug Patrick, as far as the job readiness program goes, how much does it get into counseling and stuff like that to help people prepare emotionally for the rejection, the frustration, that kind of a thing, so that they don't bounce back?
Certainly. So I would say the job readiness program dives more into marketing, like transferable skill sets and resume writing, mock interviews. But there's definitely a component there that we give them a sense of empowerment. We teach them that they have a lot to bring to the table. But we have cognitive behavioral therapy that is evidence-based. We use the University of Cincinnati curriculums at Alvis to where we target like that risky thinking, those self-limiting thoughts, and we come up with interventions and ways to address that thinking.
Doug Patrick, Associate Managing Director of Workforce Development Services at Alvis. It's a nonprofit human service agency that provides reentry services for formerly incarcerated people. Thank you so much for joining us.
All right. Thank you, Ann.
And Patrice Palmer, Reentry Social Support Specialist at the Franklin County Office of Justice Policy and Programs. Thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
Thanks to everybody else for listening. Thanks for those great calls. Hang in there. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.